Facebook is the ubiquitous social network designed to bring together its over 2 billion users. Well, there are so many positive aspects from this technology. More recently, there's been increasing debate about the major role Facebook plays in shaping society and the power it has over its users. Is it simply a network designed to bring people closer together, or has it changed into something designed to be principally addictive and to maximize commercial value? Leading futurist, entrepreneur, innovator and author Mark Pesce has almost 3 decades of experience in digital technology. He has recently written an essay titled The Last Days of Reality, published by Melbourne University Publishing, and he joins us on the line now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Now, can we start with Facebook's universal popularity? Do you think it's got to do with bringing people together, or is there a bit more to it?
Well, there's definitely 2 sides to that. One is that it has enabled people to share. Facebook has had a very, I think, focused mission about creating a platform for sharing. Now, we were sharing before Facebook. Facebook made it very easy, and it made it very easy to connect with people who were sharing. As they built that platform, as more people joined the platform, as they started to earn revenue by showing ads to people who were using the platform, Facebook then started to do what they could to make the platform and the news feed on that platform so interesting to you that you didn't want to look away. And what Facebook did was they started to show you what you wanted to see. So every time you check into Facebook, you're going to see something that's going to excite you or enrage you or delight you. It'll have some emotional effect on you. And Facebook is always watching you, so they know when they put something in your news feed how you react to it, and they know whether they should give you more or less of it.
Now, it's not new for broadcast media to show us what we want to see. You know, television puts programs on and has done since its beginning that are things that, you know, family friendly, so you can sit around and watch it, and they structure things throughout the day. So what's different about Facebook as far as giving you what you want is concerned?
Well, a television or radio station is trying to give the audience in aggregate, so the hundreds of thousands of listeners or millions of viewers, they're giving all of them together what they want. And the only metric they have is a rating, how many people are tuned in. Facebook, because it's connected to you, because you're carrying it around with you on your smartphone all of the time, is essentially tethered to you. So when you launch the Facebook app, from the moment you launch that app, everything you do on that app, how long you look at something, who you share it with, whether you scroll past something, all of that information is streamed back to Facebook and is used to build the profile, which is this, you can almost think of it as a miniature version of you that's sitting in Facebook's computers out on the cloud. And that model gets better and better. It knows how you react. So it can respond to you as an individual, and it can target you as an individual.
So how does Facebook manage to have an emotional effect on its users? How does it use that information to actually impact the people who use Facebook?
What we learned last year, on the 1st of May, the Australian published a very interesting article about a deck that they'd seen. So this is the kind of slide deck that you might show a customer when you're trying to get them to sign up for your service. And Facebook's Australian organization was showing this to some of the biggest companies in Australia. What Facebook claimed in this slideshow was that they could know its users so well, and particularly teenage users so well, that they could actually identify exactly when those teenagers were feeling vulnerable or worthless or anxious or whatever it might be, and that would be exactly the right moment to send them a particular message about a particular product to buy. So not only does Facebook sort of have that control, they have that capacity to identify and use that as an opportunity for their customers.
Now that, like, so of course there's something that sounds quite almost evil there, the idea of taking some vulnerable teenagers and selling to them, but there's potential that they could use that knowledge for services that help when people are in need. How come they're not doing that? Is it just not enough profit to do good things?
Well, there is a question now. Facebook, it looks like Facebook can actually identify when teenagers are vulnerable and maybe starting to feel like they're going to self-harm or something like that. And so there's been some work around that, about being able to identify that. This falls into, I guess, almost another problem for Facebook. If Facebook knows this, first off, they have to reveal that they know it. Second off, they kind of have to tell someone about this. Does this make the Facebook liable for that? And so in some ways, the safer position is for Facebook to pretend, and effectively they do pretend, that they don't know as much about their users as they do, and simply use that as a marketing engine rather than a way to be able to sort of gauge or measure someone's wellness, someone's mental health, someone's emotional resilience.
So is it possible and really probable that Facebook knows much, much more about us than really they let on?
It is absolutely provable that they know more about us. That slide deck sort of tipped their hand about how much they actually know and how willing they are to share that knowledge with their advertisers. And so I think that also shows not just that they know so much, but that they're capable of being able to provide information or inputs at exactly the right point in time to change someone's mood or to keep them engaged, because that's the key to the Facebook model. There's this thing we talk about, which is the algorithm, and we sort of capitalize that and put scare quotes around it, which is really all of the code that Facebook is using to watch us all of the time, to build that model of how we behave, and then to send us advertising and content based on its prediction of how we're behaving. And what happens is, over time, Facebook learns. It's an artificial intelligence. It is learning more about how we behave, and it's getting better at predicting that.
We're speaking with leading futurist, author, entrepreneur, and innovator Mark Pesce about the social network. Now, Mark, many of these sources of data are opt-in, they're input. I know that Facebook is sort of taking my location. I know when I put in a status that it has the capacity to read it. I know when I like things that it knows that I like it. Is it tracking us in ways that we don't know? Does it, like, for example, listen to me when I'm sort of talking and I have the app on my phone? Does it do anything that I'm not directly inputting, so it gathers information about me?
So there has been quite a bit, I think, of chatter about whether Facebook's actually listening to you. There's been no evidence of that. What we do know, because there is evidence of this, is that Facebook uses a technology called cookies. Now, it's not really a biscuit. It's a little bit of data that gets into your computer browser. And from that, Facebook can then track you to the places that you go, the websites that you visit, when you're not on Facebook. And so Facebook probably has a relatively complete picture of everything that you're doing online, not just the things that you're doing on Facebook. And again, that goes back and feeds the profile.
Now, the nature of privacy, it seems, has really changed in the internet age, and Facebook is really sort of the leader of that. If people are concerned about their privacy, and maybe even particularly young people, teenagers or whatever, how should they treat Facebook differently in order to protect their privacy?
Well, I mean, I think the first step is to remember at all times that Facebook is both showing you what your friends are doing, but it's also showing you what it thinks you want to see. And so it's not really showing you what we might think of as a true or an accurate representation of the world. But that view is skewed. It's sort of through rose-tinted glasses. And we forget that. When we log onto Facebook, we get delighted or excited or angry, and we forget that all of that is actually being carefully planned by Facebook. So that's the first thing we have to remember, is that it's emotionally manipulative, and we need to think of it like that. If we had an emotionally manipulative friend, we would think about that friend differently. We would work with them differently. So that's kind of how we need to start to think about Facebook. If you don't want Facebook following you around everywhere, there's a particular program called Tor Browser, T-O-R Browser. It's free software. You can download it. It's an extremely secure browser. You can visit Facebook using Tor Browser, and you can use Facebook, and then Facebook will not be able to track you anywhere else. So essentially what you've done is you've put Facebook in the sandbox and said, that's fine, I'm going to use you over here, but you aren't going to be able to leak out and see anything else.
So what's your own personal approach to using Facebook, Mark? You sound rather critical. Have you escaped the network, or are you still a user?
So I resigned from Facebook in 2010, so almost 8 years ago now. And the reason I did that back then, this is long before Facebook had really refined this algorithm, but it was because Facebook controlled what we think of as our social graph. That's the network of all of the people that we're connected to. And it was already clear from research that was being done that it was possible to learn a lot about a person that they would never tell you just by taking a look at the people that they were connected to. So you could talk about their income status or their sexual preference or their fetishes or whatever it might be, would all be revealed just by looking at the people that they're connected to. And I had some concerns about how Facebook would be using that information in the future.
Now, what do you think is in the future for social media sites such as Facebook? Almost expanding technology for them to use, but at the same time there seems to be clampdowns, you know, like particularly in the wake of the, you know, the US election Russian hacking scandal. What do you think the social media holds for us in the future?
So there are two sides to this. One is that I think people will be moving to regulate. We have to be very careful about that, because if we tie our governments into Facebook, the government is going to be tempted to use Facebook and social media as an instrument for getting its messages across and for an instrument for basically manipulating the mass mind. And so we don't want to end up in that world. That's the world that it looks like the Chinese are going down. So the Chinese are connected to the global internet, but they basically have their own big three. Rather than Google and Amazon and Facebook, they have Baidu and Alibaba and Tencent. And so what you really see is that they're so tightly controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, they're being used to manipulate the Chinese public. That's probably not the direction we want to go into. We have to be very careful about regulation. When we talk about going into the future, the next big technology after the smartphone is going to be something called augmented reality. For most people, it'll look like a really nice pair of sunglasses, but you pop these sunglasses on, you'll see the world, but you'll also see things being added to that world that will blend in more or less seamlessly. So I want you to think now, if Facebook is trying to show you what you want to see, and it has something that you're wearing over your eyes that can add things to that world, all of a sudden this idea of living inside of a Facebook-generated reality becomes something that is possible.
Well, it sounds like we're sort of walking on a knife edge to the future. Hey, Mark, it was a pleasure talking with you this morning. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
That's a futurist and author, Mark Pesce. You can read his essay, The Last Days of Reality, at meanjin.com.au. And you can find, of course, all the information for this and our other segments on our Facebook page.